Growing up where I did, kind of a rural area, my brother Tom and I often had occasion to ride our bicycles up and down the road, either going to somebody else's farm to work or just even getting to school. 6-7 miles we would sometimes ride to practice and or have reasons to ride our bicycles, you know, actually pretty far for a 6th grader, 7th grader. I can't remember if we were actually younger than that and being let to go 8-9 miles down the road, but we might have. But what we quickly learned when you're that age and you're riding a bicycle is that there are dogs. And dogs chase bicycles, right? And so what you learned was along the way that there were places that you had to speed up, places you had to be quiet, places that were just more dangerous, right? And as a kid, kind of scary, especially there were certain routes that we would go, and as you rounded up a hill and crested the hill, there was a house there whose dogs were always in the front yard, it seemed. So what that reminds me of is our first reading today, and unfortunately it's part of the first reading section that they leave out, but it talks about this royal road, the highway upon which there are no savage beasts. So this return of Israel to Jerusalem, make straight the way of the Lord. And it says there's not going to be those kind of hindrances, dangers, and other obstacles to their return. And it always reminded me that making those journeys, we would have been much more comforted if our Father had been there with us, riding along beside us. We would have been much more sure in that we would have gotten there safely if Dad had been there, an adult. And so in that first reading, we hear of the one who's expected to come and strengthen the arms of the weak, steady the shaky legs. And it does describe for us how we grow up. We grow up taking comfort in someone who's there, who's older, who can lead, who can inspire, who can take some responsibility for the situation so we don't have to. And of course, as we get older, people are expecting that of us. That's part of the growing older, becoming mature, that you become the one who shoulders the responsibility, and the next generation looks up to and says, it'll be better if you're there to strengthen, to comfort, to steady. But I don't know that we shake this notion of always kind of looking for someone to lead. Even in our culture, right? We know that one person can make a difference. That's why you replace head football coaches, right? It's not getting done. Change the guy at the top. You create a new culture, and perhaps create a winner. You elect people president in the hope that they lead and things change for the better. So we are always kind of on this road of always looking, asking the question, are you the one who's going to strengthen, steady, comfort? But we as Christians cannot get caught up, should not get caught up in looking at how the culture looks for its leaders. The culture looks for its leaders by seeing who resonates with them. Who resonates with them? But that is not what a Christian looks for. I'll give you an example. Who are our cultural leaders, really? Is it Taylor Swift? I have no idea what she sings, actually. I just pulled that name out of my head, right? You pull up a news page, Yahoo or whatever, and there's these people on there, right, that I guess are popular. And they sing. They're, okay, great, you sing songs. Why are you on the front page of my news? Well, it's because they resonate with the culture. And the culture somehow looks to them. Whether it be our politicians, our media industry individuals, we like to be led by those that reflect us. But as Christians, that is not who we're supposed to be led by. What we are led by, interestingly, is a child. The first person that we actually say, this is who leads us to show us how it is to live in the world, is a child. God comes as a child. And how does that lead us? It immediately leads us, shows us, that what we're supposed to be about is care for the weak, for the infirm, for the smallest, the marginalized. It immediately shows us that what our primary concern is life. Living life in the mystery of God's creation and redemption. It immediately shows us that God leads us in the subtle, ordinary ways of our lives, not by the grand, not by the popular, not by the famous. In our gospel today, Jesus asked them, "What did you go out in the desert to see? A reed blowing in the wind?" Well, reeds don't grow in the desert. He's making the point, did you go out to see a novelty? Did you give yourself over to going out and seeing the latest thing, this interesting thing that's going on in the desert, and that's what led you there? So many people in our culture are led by that. The latest fad, the latest popular author, the one who now can show us how to live well. 10 habits of highly successful people. You know, I go to these sometimes dinner parties, this, that, and the other, and almost inevitably somebody asks me, "Father, have you read this book by this person that really has a great idea about how to organize your life, live your life, and da-da-da?" And I always have to say, no, I just never read that stuff. Now, I have read the gospel. I've read the New Testament. I pray every day. I'm not sure that I need to know the 10 habits of most highly successful people, because I'm not interested in being successful. I'm interested in being faithful. So that's fine, but I'm not spending my time reading that stuff. So we don't go chasing after the reeds in the desert, because we already know who we're supposed to follow. And then Jesus said, "Did you go out to see somebody in fine raiment? In fine clothing?" He says, no, they live in palaces. We do not chase after the glitterati. We don't base the way that we dress, value ourselves, or anything else on how the world presents itself as glamorous, as acceptable. All those things are simply part of the material world. Now, I have nothing against dressing nice or looking good, right? But we don't follow that. That doesn't consume who we are. That doesn't define who we are. So we don't go out after that. Jesus says, then interestingly, he says, "I tell you, you went out to see a prophet, and more than a prophet." And then he goes on to say, he's the greatest of those born among women, and yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. What we follow day after day is the call of John to an integrity of heart and life that is completely given over to the Lord. John says, he sends his disciples, "Are you the one, or should we look for another?" John is in prison. John hears what Jesus is doing, and perhaps John even said to himself, "I was expecting someone who would come more fashionably, with greater power, greater public impact, a famous orator, all those things that the world would reckon as valuable." Maybe even John was thinking that. But Jesus quotes back to him Isaiah. "This is what you tell John, the blind see, the lame walk." And then he says, "And blessed is the one who takes no offense at me." Blessed is the one who is able to choose what they follow from the subtle mystery, the subtle moving of God in the everyday ordinary experience of life that begins with the child born in the crib. Yet the least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. The ones who are in the kingdom of heaven are those who are consumed by God's love and no longer ask the question, who? What should I follow? How should I orient my life? The kingdom of heaven is filled with those who are totally given to the Lord. So on this third Sunday of Advent, we can ask ourselves, what do we really follow? Who do we look for or to for comfort, for strength, for the steadying of weak hands and knees? And is it truly the Lord?